Welcome to the Gay Buddhist Forum, where teachers from all schools of Buddhism offer their perspectives on the Dharma and its application in modern times, especially for LGBTQI audiences. These talks are offered freely to the world and made possible by appreciative listeners. If you would like to support our efforts to share the Dharma with underserved audiences, please visit gaybuddhist.org. There you can donate, find a list of upcoming speakers, or enjoy many hundreds of these recorded talks dating back to 1996.
Welcome back. It's our tradition now to introduce ourselves. My name is Jeff.
I'm Amos.
I'm Len.
I'm Max.
Steve.
Kaleo.
I'm Kay.
I'm Terry.
Harry.
My name is Wally.
My name is Michael.
My name is Henry.
And Ted.
Leor.
I'm George.
I'm Michael.
My name is Cass.
I'm Casey.
Jess.
Jack.
Tatuan.
My name is Paul.
I'm Jim.
Jim.
I'm Ray.
I'm David.
Jose.
Mike.
I'm David.
I'm Jerry.
Richard.
Joe.
Peter.
Bob.
Michael.
My name is Jerry.
I'm Michael.
My name is David.
Okay. Now we'll have our speaker for about 45 to 50 minutes. And today we're fortunate to have Carol Newhouse. Carol Osmer Newhouse has studied insight meditation for more than 20 years and has been teaching for 10. Her root teacher is Ruth Dennison, who was empowered by the great meditation master Ubon Khin of Burma. She's also studied with Dr. Rina Sakar at CIS and Dr. Tin Tin in daily life practice. She is the founding teacher of the Lesbian Buddhist Sangha at Berkeley. Welcome.
Thank you. I realize I haven't been here for a while. I've actually been gotten older and taught a little longer and stuff. We'll get into that. It's really nice to be here. I know I say this every time. I'm just going to say it again. You feel like my brother Sangha. I know we've never managed to merge the two in any way, but I'm sort of the psychic connection. And I talk about you guys in the East Bay, and I talk about my lesbian sisters here, and it feels very familiar and welcoming, so thank you. As soon as the election was over and I could relax, and that's a mild version of what it was. Oh, my God. And people around me could relax and everything. I realized the holidays were coming. Yeah. You know, it's like, woo, another thing that's intense. And I thought that I would jump the gun a bit and talk a little bit about Thanksgiving. I don't know about your life, but that's exactly what happened to me. All of a sudden, the election was over, and I could kind of breathe. And then people started calling me, you know, relatives or friends or, so, what are you going to do? You know, are you coming to my house? Or are we going to do a gay thing? Or am I going to my, you know, sister-in-law's, you know? You know, it's like, because I have people, you know, my gay community, but also people who, from my family of origin, that live here, too. And it's like, and some of them are talking to each other, so literally. So I don't know who's coming. Anyway, so you know, it brings up the typical stuff, but then you know, I have been deepening in my spiritual practice over the years about how to deal with all this, and you know, Thanksgiving is a nice idea, right? If you think of the word. So I put myself through the last couple of weeks a little bit of, especially in the last week. Kind of practice around Thanksgiving. I'm sort of a linguist in certain ways. I'm interested in words. And so the words mean something to me. So what I'm going to talk about today is Thanksgiving, the understanding I have of gratitude, And the psychological association with that I have, I'm also a psychotherapist, so I go there with things. And also moving out of that maybe more into Dharma or Buddhism and the merging of the two and how I understand them. And also maybe beginning with the politics, too, of Thanksgiving, right? Aside from the ambivalence about our families or who we spend time with and things, I think for me, it's also the whole connotation of Thanksgiving and where it came from, you know, and should I go have a Native American celebration instead, which is another option that people do sometimes because of this understanding that the pilgrims came here, you know, and it was a wonderful Thanksgiving from them and not too many other people that were already here. So, you know, people talk about that. So leaving that aside and really trying to move into a place of appreciation of what is and making the best of what we've got. Thanksgiving is an interesting concept and an interesting practice. I closed my eyes and I tried to think, all right, when did I first learn to be thankful? Or how did this even happen for me? I didn't come up with much right away, but then I remembered I had just been over the other day to my one of my families, and they have a little child, a little girl who's now actually three, but at the time she was about two or so, when I remembered this. And I handed her something, and her mother said, now say thank you. You know how they do. It's just sort of conditioning thing. And thank you, Auntie. You know, or something like this. And then I began to notice this was happening all the time, right, with her, that they were really trying to ingrain this in this kid. And she was saying it. I don't know what she was thinking, if she even got it, right, but she was saying this. And then I went to her three-year-old birthday party recently, and I saw the same thing, right? They would bring these presents. It was a big party. Big presents. Lots of money. And she was getting these objects, you know, and she was sort of in a daze, right, when those things happen, you know. And her mother saying, say thank you, you know. And so she would say thank you and look a little more intently, you know, what was going on. But I still don't know if she's beginning to get something, I think. But I don't know. I don't know if they've ever explained thankfulness to her or what that was about. I think it's sort of a polite thing, right, in our culture. We have thank you on our restaurant stickers or thank you on our... You know, it just appears everywhere. Thank you for shopping here. You know, well, it's true, right? So it's become this thing, sort of like have a nice day, right? It's sort of this thing. But I also thought that was a good idea, that they were doing this, you know, for whatever motivation or understanding, and maybe eventually she'd come to think about what she was saying. So I thought about it, you know, from that memory, and I didn't have a lot of childhood memories, but I'm sure it was the same thing with my parents. And so what does it mean to me now? And what's valuable in all that for me, and for us perhaps? So moving on to the realm more of psychology, there's a really strong association, for those of you who are into psychology, you may certainly already know this, with gratitude or thankfulness and well-being. There's been studies, and I'm going to talk a little about this because I think sometimes it helps us, our Western minds, to kind of get this, you know, and then maybe translate it into Dharma. There's a large body of recent work that suggests that people who are more grateful have higher levels of subjective well-being. So that's the clue, subjective, right? It doesn't mean because we're grateful we're going to get a lot of money, right? You know, there's some of those magic spiritual practices that if you are a good person, then maybe everything's going to go fine, you know, that kind of stuff. No, it's subjective well-being. In other words, your perception of how you are and how you feel and what's happening for you, right? So if I'm grateful, you kind of see this for what I've got, you know, even if it is money, whatever, I'm going to perceive that I have enough money, kind of. Right? It just kind of goes that way. If I'm grateful for my living situation, some people might think it's not the greatest, but I really kind of like it, and I'm grateful I have a roof over my head, right? Oh, so am I, you know, feeling pretty good? right? I have a kind of sense of well-being. Yes. So it's subjective, right? So that's really interesting, so that we can move into well-being without getting everything we need or want, right? Grateful people, there's a whole list of them, are more happier, less depressed, and less stressed. And they're even more satisfied with some of their social relationships. It kind of translates over into how we interrelate. Grateful people have higher levels of personal growth and purpose. And it's even cited that grateful people have more self-acceptance. We'll get into more of that later, I think. Grateful people have more positive ways of coping with difficulties experienced in life. In other words, gratefulness means that people may seek support from other people when they have difficulties. And it even says that we can reinterpret things and grow from our experiences more easily if we tend to be grateful. You can kind of begin to see the link of that. In other words, we're not so closed, you know? We're kind of satisfied, kind of happy with our situation. And when things go wrong, we have greater coping skills with how we deal with it. We don't freak immediately. Grateful people even sleep better, it's said. I think this is probably because of the thought patterns. You know, that's been proven. If we have more positive thoughts, or especially as we go to bed at night, we're not, oh God, you know, we're sort of more, oh, I'm going to sleep now and be nice, you know, my life or something. We're going to sleep better. I mean, these things are just pretty kind of almost obvious, but sometimes we don't necessarily make, I don't, the connection with thankfulness or gratefulness or appreciation. Actually, gratitude has been said to have one of the strongest links with mental health of many character traits. So I think this is really helpful for us to think about. Numerous studies that I could find suggest that grateful people are more likely to have higher levels of happiness and lower levels of depression or stress, which goes together. So I thought I would cite some of what they call in psychology interventions or techniques or practices you can do to further gratefulness in your lives. You may have heard of some of these. You may have even tried them. You know, they're a little bit pop psychology associated. So it's not where I always go. But I think whatever works, works. You know, and there's a lot of people that don't deepen in Buddhism in the ways that some of us have, but they're willing to just try something, you know, that comes a little bit more out of a psychological model. So, for example, there was a study where they were studying gratitude, and there were all these things they asked people to do. But the thing that was the biggest short-term effect on people's happiness and well-being, sense of well-being, came from the gratitude visit, it's called, where participants write and deliver a letter of gratitude, right, to someone in their life. So you may have heard of things like that, similar things. But this was the thing that worked the best, everything that they had recommended. And the longest lasting effects in this study were caused by the act of writing gratitude journals, which is similar, right? And whether that's the thing where you write, you know, three things every day that you're thankful for. I know some people have actually done that. Or whether you just kind of write about it in your journal, and, you know, it doesn't have to be done a certain way. This was found to be very beneficial. So in general, while many emotions and personality traits are important to well-being, we have to acknowledge that, there's evidence that gratitude may be uniquely important because its effect over a longer term. And one of the things that I thought was really interesting is they mentioned transitions, and we talk a lot about that, especially some of us who are getting older. We have life transitions, developmental transitions. You know, some of this is associated with what we call loss, but it's certainly associated with change. You know, when we have to transition from one job to another, from one partner to another, from maybe even a different lifestyle as far as coming out. There's many transitions and in aging. Certainly some of us are facing some of those. There's health transitions. And this, again, seems to be uniquely important. It mentions life transitions, specifically people who were grateful before their transition were less stressed, able to cope better with the changes, right? And less depressed because of them. So this is sort of a sales pitch here, is what I'm giving you. You know, I mean, it's important to have some material, I feel, behind things that don't always come naturally. You know, of course we feel thankful for some things, but really when we think about it or when I think about it, I don't really spend a lot of time thinking about I'm grateful. You know, I'm getting better, like I said. But I don't spend a quarter of my day thinking of that, for example, I'm sure. So specific techniques or interventions can be helpful, right? Writing about someone for whom we're grateful, even if they're not alive and we can't deliver it, or we can't deliver it for other possible reasons. It can also be a healing mechanism. Writing about these kind of things increases our experience of positive emotion immediately after the exercise, right? And we can kind of think that. We're thinking about something that just happened, you know, and we think, wow, that was nice. I'm really glad they did that, you know, for us or for me or whatever. Zoom, it's gone, right? So we assumed that, but no, it has a longitudinal effect. Just like in the Dharma when we talk about mindfulness, you know, the more present you are, the more present you are. You know, it reconditions us, right? It's a training program. So the more present we are to these moments of gratitude, whether expressed to us or we express them, doesn't really matter, we just feel them. It's a felt sensation. It grows within us. It grows within us. And now I'm going to sort of softly try to shift into that sort of merging area between psychology and the Dharma, or Buddhism, my spiritual practice. It seems that gratitude also is shown to improve a person's generosity or altruism. Now, you can see the connection with well-being there, right? So naturally, the study says that they actually found a gratitude that was correlated with economic generosity, not just doing nice things for people, but even donating money, right? Or sharing money, or sharing maybe some of our physical things like an apartment with someone, or sharing food, or, you know, that there was a real correlation about that. Increased monetary giving was noted. Increased monetary giving. From these results, a study shows that gracious people are more likely to sacrifice individual gains. Okay, that's what that is, right? My money. Or so we think it is, ours. Our money, sharing it more communally. Right? Whatever that looks like for us. I don't know if you've had the experience of practicing generosity in whatever way you do, and as we know from the Dharma, that was one of the fundamental, you know, principles of Buddhism, and still is in the East more so. Sharing and generosity, the gratitude that people had for the teachings, and you've heard this before, I'm sure, many of you, right? Which was producing well-being in their lives, right? They felt gratitude, right? So they would what? Give back. That's what we call dana, right? They would give back to the teachers or the Buddhist community, the monastery, you know, whatever form it took. Not so much in our culture, right? And we struggle with that a bit, I think. Many teachers, as you know, work for dana or generosity. Not in every Buddhist tradition, but certainly in Theravada, the one I'm from. And therefore, it doesn't really work so well to support yourself doing this kind of thing in our culture. However, there is a link, though, between gratitude and altruism, and giving and taking. And also, you begin to see the link of interconnectedness, right? That another big principle in Buddhism, that there is no separate solid self, right? We have a sense, we know who we are. My name is Carol, your name is Richard, whatever. But really, we are so intimately influencing each other every single moment, and that's the truth, the way things are. And so gratitude, again, is, I see the Zen practitioners who, you know, bow a lot, and I think of that physical expression, a conditioning. Oh, yes. Oh, yes. Thank you, but more than that. It's more than thank you. It's, wow, thank you, because we are connected. We're interconnected. And if we weren't supporting each other, things would go downhill really fast, you know. And so thank you. Thank you for that. It's a deep bow. It's a lot more than just, hey, thanks. You know, it's like, oh, yes, interconnected, one being. There are correlations between gratitude and what we call empathy, right? Makes sense, again, right? Oh, I get it. Again, we're connected. I feel something. This is a practice of sensation. See the next time that you feel thankful for something you did or someone else did, and see how you feel in the moment. Not just that you're thinking, oh, that's cool, but, oh, I feel a little more open, right? I feel a little happier, I feel a little better. No, just see if that's not true. You know, the Dharma says, don't believe me, don't even believe these studies. You know, believe your own experience, right? But try it out, test it. Generosity and helpfulness, again, of course, the more you feel good about an experience like this, well, the more generous you feel and the more helpful you become, right? This is good. I want to talk a little bit about the place that I work. I'm also clinical director of a social service agency. And I don't know, for those of you who are aware of this, but because of a lot of the cuts and the economic downturn, et cetera, there's been real cutbacks in social services, and also the recipients, you know, the participants, the clients, as they're called, the consumers, also sometimes are more sick or more needy, let's put it that way, because of the whole situation. So you have a dysfunctional system, you have people needing help that are more distressed. So that's my workplace, and because of this, in recent months, there have been some serious threats to the actual institution that I work for, as far as meeting payroll, meeting financial obligations, because the way it works is everybody holds on to their money when these things happen. So those of you who know about money realize this, right? So you have Sacramento, we're going to pay a little later to Solano County, say. Oh, and Solano County needs some money, and they're going to pay a little later. As it is, we were normally getting our payment for services rendered to our clients maybe 2 month delay. Now it's 3 months delay. You know what? We can't do it. We don't have like a loan floating in the bank somewhere or something like that. We used to before all that changed. You know, we had $100,000 loan floating at, I think, Umpqua Bank or something, where, oh, okay, payroll money, they're doing it to us again. Well, all right, we can meet payroll and pay them back, right? Because we do eventually get our money, but it's the cash flow thing, right? So the reason I'm telling you this is because sometimes the people who make the most money, and I have to do it sometimes because I'm one of them, asks people to hold their check. You can't hold people's check. It's against the law. But they can voluntarily say, hey, I know what's going on. You know, I got a little savings. You can hold it for, and we're not talking about months here. I'm talking about 2 weeks, 1 week, 4 days, you know, something like that. Because we're always calculating when this money is going to happen for us. And gratitude and thankfulness for me has really helped me with that process. Because I have a lot of anger about it. And I have dissatisfaction and stress about having to even deal with this and ask people about it if I have to. And frankly, I work hard. Why should, you know, I not get my check on time? But I'm just lucky that I can afford that, right? So I'm thankful, first of all, I noticed, for the fact I can even do this, right? Second of all, I'm thankful for the fact that others in the workplace are willing to stay here and do this work and continue with us and serve these people. I'm thankful for the work we're doing. I'm thankful for the appreciation I sometimes get when people do notice that I'm working really hard. And so it's a good thing. And I'm appreciative of it, is what I'm trying to say. Right? And why am I telling you this? Because it helps me do something that's difficult and sell it to other people besides, you know, for the survival of an important, what I feel, service. So on a practical level, these things transfer and grow in our hearts. And I think this feeling of well-being that I have in the workplace, although it's threatened several times a day, somehow keeps me going. So I think it's a good example. So I was talking about how gratitude fosters generosity, open-heartedness. We become more helpful, I think. And the word for that, in some circles of Buddhism, is bodhisattva, right? The person who is there, the person who is helpful, the person who is generous, the person who extends themselves. A lot of reasons to practice gratitude, I think. Now I'm going to try to link this up with more pure Dharma. Some of you may be familiar with the term Abhidharma. It's the term in Theravada Buddhism, again, for the original Buddhist psychology. It came out of the early years of Buddhism. And I like that we mentioned Dr. Reena Sirkar, who was one of my teachers at CIIS, because she is an expert in this. She's the real thing. If anybody wants to study Buddhist psychologists, go to Reena. She's retired, but she still lives here on Dolores, actually. Dolores and 22nd or something. And she has a little center there, and she's really quite wonderful. When I look through all of Buddhist psychology, and I try to think of, okay, where is gratitude? You know, there's a few places, but what I came up with for this morning are the four emotions that the Buddha suggests we practice. And there were basically only four, really. And you're going to know what they are. They're the four Brahma Viharas, or divine abodes. This is coming from the Theravada place, but you'll recognize them, right? First one, kindness, loving kindness, right? Compassion, joy, or sympathetic joy, and equanimity. Expressions of love, basically, and caring, but in their own kind of, their own vibe, their own way that they come across. So within those, I find gratitude first in the third, in joy or sympathetic joy, depending how you want to look at that. Some of you know what that is, I think. But before we try to explain it, I want to just mention that mindfulness comes in here, because without mindfulness practice, awareness practice, we can't do what I just said. Like someone thanks us or we thank someone and then we feel something. We're present, right, to that experience. So mindfulness of the experience is necessary in order to feel sympathetic joy, for example. So we have both practices. We have sort of a metta practice or a joyful practice, but we also have the awareness that's even happening. Okay? So, sympathetic joy. Recognition takes place. Knowingness arises because of clear seeing and understanding. Oh, I'm feeling really good about that wonderful thing that happened to my friend. Like, that's what it is. There's a lot of talk about, well, maybe not enough talk, but there is talk about this because it's so available to us, right? We can't always feel happy about our own lives as hard as we try, right? I mean, I can just speak for myself. But there's a lot of other examples, right, for us. Other people, good stuff happening to other people, right? So, you know, that becomes problematic. Well, how come it didn't happen to me? Or maybe, yeah, it's good, but it could have been better. Or, whatever, or I don't know, you know, I'm busy, or yeah, that's great. No, not yeah, that's great. Open up your heart. Why? To be a nice person. Yes, it's part of that. It's a moral discipline, sila. It's a good thing. But really, why? For you. What good is it for you saying, yeah, that's nice? What good is that? Or even worse? I don't know what always happens to him. You know? I mean, is that helping you? Is that helping us? No. So gratitude and appreciation can be found here in other people's good fortune. Right? That's the teaching. Pure and simple. I'm going to give you an example that was difficult for me. Just let me check. So for almost 10 years, maybe a little less, I'm in a couple, a long-term couple, and I had two other lesbian couples that we were friends with, one couple in particular, and for a long time we talked about living together. Somehow when we got older, it was always getting later, getting older. But I would say around age 50 even, you know, we started realizing, you know, hey, and I come from a communal era anyway, you know, where living together was cool and I know what it's like and I can do that. You know, it's not a big challenge for me now, even though I just live with my partner now. So we talked about this a lot. We couldn't make it happen for many years. And then recently, this couple that we were closest to started finding some places in the East Bay. And to make a long story short, over about a six-month period of kind of talking it out together and seeing about this place and that place, the four of us anyway, and there were some other people maybe involved too, it came down to Annie and I can't afford it. We can't afford what the other couple can afford at all. There's a real difference. And over the years, there was a bit of a difference, but it was getting to be more of a difference. So I started getting emails, you know, this is how much this one's going to cost, or, you know, things like that. And I began to realize pretty soon that that wasn't going to happen. And I just waited to see what they would do, and they found one they wanted. And I got a really gracious communication from the person I'm the closest to in all this, saying, I realize, you know, I know you can't do this. You know, and you know what? We have to do this. We just have to. You know, we need to live together, whatever. It's time. I'm getting older, you know. And there it was, you know. And that was my perfect moment, you know. Okay, why not me? You know, don't I deserve this? You know, of course I do. But we can't do it, you know. And I could resent them. You know, I can go through whatever I want. There was a teeny moment of that, but it really wasn't resentment for them. You know, I have to admit, they were very respectful, you know, and they shared their concerns, and, you know, it was like, okay, we're going to do this thing, goodbye. You know, they were really there for the feelings part of it, but it was still happening, you know. And Annie and I talked it over, and we really did well with it, you know. It's like, wow, good for them. But I don't think I could be able to do this, and now we're going to have solstice at their place, their new big place. You know, and I'm going to go to that. You know, so I couldn't do this without this kind of understanding. You know, it's for me just as much as I'm practicing this gratitude and appreciation for what they, this joy for them, you know, as it is for them. You can see why. I could spend the next 10 years bitter about this one, you know. So, it is so helpful to me, and that's why I chose to share it when this Thanksgiving thing is coming up for us all. I'm going to share one more experience with its link to sympathetic joy, but also joy for ourselves. You know how the Dharma has a tendency, I think, which I understand, of talking about other people? You know, we need to be joyful for other people. We need to be kind to other people, right? Compassionate to other people. Yes. And I know in some of the Dharma talks you've probably heard, hopefully, and gay people particularly, are putting more emphasis on, and we need to take care of ourselves. We need to put all these beautiful emotion, heavenly emotions on ourselves, right? So there can be whole Dharma talks about that and actual sitting practices that do that. But there was a 25th anniversary party that Annie and I wanted to have also recently. And in thinking about where I wanted to do the party, I picked a close friend of mine who's also a Dharma practitioner's house in Berkeley that has a beautiful garden that she's a gardener and she's cultivated over quite a period of time, and it's just really lovely, and I wanted to do that because I like gardens and I also feel a lot for environments, and that I wanted that kind of an environment. It was in August, so I thought it would be beautiful. Well, we did this and it was beautiful. But the relationship to the question of joy and sympathetic joy and appreciation and gratitude is that, first of all, she said yes. She didn't have to say yes. She didn't have a girlfriend. She didn't have 25 years of, I won't say bliss, but let's say a really, really, really good relationship, I would say, which I'm very grateful for, another grateful practice. But she gets it. You know, she thought, wow, this is something that I can give and share in. And, you know, she just wanted to do it. You know, and I think not just because she's a nice person or something, she really wanted to do it because she wanted to offer us something. You know, and she knew that I would appreciate it, particularly because the garden's all. So she did. But, of course, the interconnectedness of all that is, first of all, I felt extremely grateful and appreciative of her, so that enhanced my own sense of well-being practically for the party, you know, but also just because I had someone that would do that in my, for me, you know, isn't that a great thing? And then the people who came, right? Oh, what a beautiful place. Oh, Miriam, this is so gorgeous. Wow, what kind of flower is that? Oh, you know, Miriam is like feeling a lot of appreciation and joy. So there it is. And it was mutual this time. I received it, she received it, we received it back and forth. And then afterwards, I was so grateful to her, probably because it had worked so beautifully and had been everything I had expected or more, that I bought her a gift certificate at her favorite nursery. You know, and I hadn't planned on doing that. She didn't ask for anything, but I thought, oh, of course, that's what I should do. You know, and that was the monetary piece. Right? So I was seeing as I was going over my notes yesterday that, yeah, these things do work this way. Try to find it in your own life, because I found it in those two experiences. So I thought I would share that. And again, she, of course, went and got a special plant and put it, because it was a decent amount of money, into her garden. And now that plant will always be there. Right? So it's tangible. You know, very interesting. And it will be, for me, about this, about sympathetic joy. About the sharing of joy, making it happen, making it bigger than it is. When I'm happy for someone else's good fortune, it gets bigger, right? It's more so. Okay. So I would like you to practice now for a moment. I'm going to do a very short meditation here, and then I'm going to ask you to, I'm just previewing it, to turn to somebody and do a little thing with them. Okay? I think we have enough time. So if you'll just close your eyes for a moment. This will be very short, maybe just 2 or 3 minutes. When I say the word gratitude, appreciation, is there a sensation that comes up from you? If you take a moment to think about anything that's just come up that you're thankful for, we're going to do it really quickly. How do you feel about it? That's the important thing. What's the sensate experience of that moment of thankfulness or gratitude? Do you feel it in your body? Is it just kind of a general sense? How do you know? How do you know what's happened? And just stay with that feeling for a second. Okay, you can just come back and open your eyes. Thank you. So I'd like you to just turn to someone that you're sitting near, just one person, and face them a little bit, and we'll do an exchange. So pick someone, just turn a little bit towards someone. Has everybody got someone? Are we an even number? You can do three if you want. But it's going to be quick because I only have about 7 minutes. Okay. Pick who the first person is going to be, and what your task is to just simply, you can close your eyes and go more internally if you want to for this, but don't take too long, and just come back with three things that you're grateful for. That's all. And it can be present moment or it can be in the past. Doesn't matter. Just whatever. Just trust whatever comes up. So identify who the first person's going to be. Okay. And go. And then I'll tell you when it's the second person's turn.
Right.
And the GBF will have our annual Thanksgiving potluck on Thanksgiving Day at my place in East Bay, and that will certainly be an opportunity to express and experience our gratitude. And so if you're interested in coming, please let me know, because we are trying to coordinate dishes. And members are encouraged to bring guests, partners, friends, or the guys you meet the night before, or whatever.
That's really nice. Thank you.
Generosity. Off the top.
I am the host today, and welcome. There's some refreshments on the table. Please help yourself. There's some hot water for tea. Just make sure you clean up the cup with soapy hot water and rinse it off when you're done. And I'll be passing around a donut bowl. This is a perfect opportunity to give from a place of gratitude for both the facility and our wonderful speaker. And suggested amount is $5 to $8. There is a sign-up sheet on the credenza over here if you don't want to get on the email list and receive the newsletter. And At 12:30, some of us meet and go out for social, or for lunch at that time, so we meet by the door. That's it. Thank you.
Okay. Bill Childs, Philip Prince, and I, all staying in the San Francisco Choral Society, and next weekend we're presenting a wonderful concert a Saturday night and Sunday afternoon. There are flyers out there. It's the Schubert's Mass in A-flat. He was part of a gay circle in Vienna in the early part of the 19th century, and they had male singing groups, and he was such a prodigiously gifted composer that they supported him as they were able, and he slept on people's couches, and he did sleep around. but he had this unparalleled occult activity in the last year and a half of his life when he was dying, and this is an especially gorgeous piece of music that is foreshadows much of 20th century music, and the Brahms Schicksal Suite is just a gorgeous one movement choral piece. And anyway, I recommend that these flyers are out there if you're interested. And of course, you can get a ticket at the door if you have a last minute impulse. Thank you.
Next week, we will hear from, we'll have the pleasure of John Burney, great Vedanta teacher and much experience and wisdom to share with us. So please join me in thanking Carol again, and we will now form a circle for our dedication marriage.
Thank you for listening to the Gay Buddhist Forum. If you would like to hear several new talks per month and be notified of upcoming speakers so you can participate live, please subscribe to this podcast, like us on Facebook, and join our mailing list by visiting gaybuddhist.org.